More of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. And this is how the second season of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Unsolved podcast begins.
Back in 1981, Michelle Manders was 2.5 years old, and she lived with her family in a duplex in Watertown. And in October of that
The second year, installment in the 8-part print and audio series is published today. Gina Barton is a criminal justice investigative reporter for the Journal Sentinel, and she joins us in the studio to tell us a little more about the latest series. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with a thumbnail sketch of the crime that is at the heart of the second Unsolved series, both the podcast and the articles that go with it.
The current season of Unsolved is about the disappearance and death of a little girl named Michelle Manders, who was 2.5 years old when she disappeared from her home in Watertown back in 1981.
Let me ask how the success of the first season of Unsolved shaped how you approach this one.
In the first season of Unsolved, we looked at the case of John Zara, who was 14 when he disappeared from Franklin High School. And after that series ran and after that podcast came out, I got a whole bunch of emails, phone calls, feedback from people saying, hey, will you look into my relative's case, my loved one's case? And so I heard from Michelle's brother, Chris, who is now in his 40s, saying, we've always had questions about my sister's death. Would you look into her case? And so I was able to get some documentation from the police about his sister's case, and I found lots of people to interview, so we went ahead with it.
I was going to ask about that. I would imagine that one of the things that you have to have in order to be able to pursue a case like this for a season of Unsolved is enough people who were around at the time of the crime and are still around and have the crime still sort of firmly in their memory.
Definitely. I think you need two things. You need some sort of documentation, police reports, media archives. You need some kind of recorded or written reports. And then you also need people to interview so that you can make sure that those two things are similar. And in the first season of Unsolved, I had 6,000 pages of police reports and a couple of really enthusiastic police officers, but only one family member. This season, most of the records have been destroyed, which may be one reason why it's still unsolved. But I was able to get 200 pages of police reports and a couple of law enforcement people. But I spent lots of time with Michelle's mother and sister and brother. So this season, we're hearing more from the family about the effects of her loss on them.
Why were so many of the documents in this case destroyed?
That's an excellent question that I haven't gotten a clear answer to yet. The most that I can tell is that because they ruled Michelle's death an accident, which again, I'm not sure if that's what it actually was, but in any case, had it been ruled a homicide, they would have to keep all the documentation and evidence until it's solved. But in ruling it an accident, that requirement goes away. So the last I was able to figure out is that all of the documents were destroyed several years ago.
So without going into too much detail, because obviously this is why people would read the series and listen to the podcasts, why is it such a complex case?
Michelle disappeared from her bedroom in Watertown in the middle of the night. She was 2.5 years old. It was a rainy night. It was obviously dark. And 22 days later, her body was found on the bank of the Rock River. It was ruled a drowning, but she had some other injuries that could have been caused by beating, strangling. What the medical examiner did is kind of put the context together and decided, yes, she died of a drowning. And then from there, the authorities made the leap that, okay, it was an accident. But nobody ever figured out how did she get from her house to the river.
What are the kinds of technologies that did not exist at the time of Michelle's death that, had this investigation taken place today, might have made the difference?
That's one of the things that's been so hard about looking into this case, is that if that had happened today, she probably wouldn't have died. They didn't have Amber Alerts back then. Those didn't come on the scene until 96. They didn't have the electronic billboards that you see now, the cell phone alerts that you have with missing kids. So that's part one, where maybe she would have been found before she died, whether she had wandered out of the house or been kidnapped or whatever. And then the other thing is, of course, no DNA back then. And again, if there had been DNA, would they have thought to look for it on some of the evidence? If they thought it was an accident and that, you know, predetermined the investigation, I don't know. But we can't go back now and test any of those items.
How long have you been working on this series?
I've been working on this for probably about a year. After the first season of Unsolved, I took a little bit of time off with murder cases. Because as you can imagine, it gets a little bit personally difficult to deal with that all the time.
Well, right. I was going to ask, you know, this must have been equally intense for you.
Yes. I have two kids. And just last week, I had asked my sister if she would listen to this season and tell me what she thought. And really quickly, she texted me and said, oh, this is about a dead baby. I can't listen to that because my nephew's 2.5, which is the same age Michelle was.
How do you weigh the competing issues of, you know, wanting really to do justice to this family that went through this, and at the same time making something that's compelling listening and, you know, and at some level is entertaining?
That's something that I always struggle with in almost any story I do or any project or investigation I do, because if it's not interesting, people aren't going to read it, aren't going to listen to it, and it's not going to have any impact. But you can't cross that line of being so interesting that it's exploitive. So I try really hard to think a lot about, if I were this mother, what would I think of this? You know, if this were my family member that this had happened to, how would I feel about this presentation? And I may not always be perfect at that, but I try really hard to think about that. And when I'm interviewing the people, the family members, I try to explain to them exactly what I'm going to do and why I'm going to do it so that they aren't surprised if it comes off as a little bit more interesting than, you know, they might want it to.
This is not something that you would normally do when you're out there just interviewing somebody for, I don't want to call anything you do a run-of-the-mill story, but for an 800-word story that's going to run in the daily paper.
Right. I think the big difference is the more time you spend on something, the more you are asking a family to invest their time, their trust in you, the more that you owe them in terms of those expectations and those feedbacks. It's a lot different, you know, spending hours. I went to Arizona, where Michelle's mom lives now, and spent 2 entire days with her recording and interviewing and looking at scrapbooks about Michelle and things like that. That's a lot different than a daily story when you would call somebody and have a 5-minute phone call with them.
I imagine you would expect after this series you're going to get even more calls and emails from people hoping that season 3 is about their unsolved case.
I'm guessing it will. In fact, I already have 2 other cases that I'm kind of tossing around that might be interesting. And the other thing that's tough about picking the next one is that I have listeners all over America and even in Australia, Europe. And so when I hear from those people, it's really kind of hard to explain to them, well, I'm actually in Wisconsin. My employer's in Wisconsin, so we need to do a Wisconsin case. Maybe that'll change at some point.
Does it surprise you that there's so many cases that are out there that actually have played out in southeastern Wisconsin that could be material for another series?
It doesn't really surprise me because the timing isn't limiting me. It's not like I have to have a case that happened 2 years ago or 5 years ago or within the past 10 years even. I think if you tried to go back much before about 1970, it would get really tough because people would have passed away or their memories wouldn't be as good. But so far, I'm thinking that if you go back all the way to 1970, that's a lot of time to work with and a lot of unsolved cases.
Gina Barton, job well done. Thanks.
Thanks, Mitch.
Gina Barton is a criminal justice investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's the host of the latest season of the newspaper's Unsolved podcast. The latest episode is out today, and you will find a link at wuwm.com.